In the FDNY, we play to win on every run, every tour, every day. Losing's not an option. Losing's not an, I've never met a firefighter that said, yeah, losing's an option in my department or on my shift. You know, some may say, ah, my department might have a losing mindset, but I don't. Well, then that means your crew doesn't, your day doesn't. Wherever I'm working today is the best firehouse on the planet, period. I don't care what the reputation is. I don't care about any of that. I'm here. It's going to be the best. It's going to be the best. And we're going to do the job and we're going to do it right. And we're going to train because we're going to make sure that we are better. And that's because I've had leaders young in my career that they came in, even though they weren't assigned to my firehouse, they came in and showed that they care for us, that they love us by training us and making us better by taking ownership in us and understanding that they are part of the FDNY. And today they're working in this part of that, in that part of the FDNY. That is the winning mindset, that can do, get it done, that we are going to win. We are going to save lives. We are going to be trained to be the best aggressive and safe firefighter that we can.
The First Responder Liaison Network is proud to present to you the Kitchen Table Podcast. Join us as we explore leadership from perspectives around the globe, from firefighters to fire chiefs, civilians to CEOs. Our conversations have one simple goal: build more leaders.
Welcome, everyone, to the Kitchen Table. The Kitchen Table is brought to you by the First Responder Liaison Network. The network is organized for the development, implementation, and ongoing support of mentorship and professional development programs, inspiring our youth and young adults to mature into engaged civic leaders and resilient community sentinels. Music and graphics are brought to you by Kai Elephant Productions. Today is episode 47. We're back in the East Coast today as we visit the New York City Fire Department. We're talking the winning mindset and what that means at the FDNY. We're also talking training, teamwork, mentorship, competency, soft skills of the job, and a whole lot more. And our guest today served with the Fire Department of New York for more than 31 years, and most recently served as a Deputy Assistant Chief. During his career, he held several senior staff positions, including the Chief of the Fire Academy, Chief of Training, and the Chief of Safety. He has also been a member of the East Farmingdale Fire Department since 1983, Long Island, New York. He is the Managing Director of the First Responder Center for Excellence. Our guest holds a bachelor's degree in fire service administration from the State University of New York and a master's degree in security studies from the Naval Postgraduate School Center for Homeland Defense and Security. He has served as an advisory panel member for UL Firefighter Safety Research Institute's study of coordinated attack and acquired structures. Our guest was a keynote speaker for Firehouse Expo in 2022 and was a presenter at the 2022 and 23 U.S. Fire Administrator Summit on Fire Prevention and Control. He is the author of the book, Cornerstones of Leadership, On and Off the Fire Ground, Training, Teamwork, Mentorship. Today, we welcome Chief Frank Lieb on the Kitchen Table. I would say good morning, Chief, but I understand over there in New York, it's good afternoon. How are you?
Yes, it's afternoon here in New York. Absolutely. Well, I appreciate you having me on the show today.
Absolutely. Well, we want to thank publicly Corley Moore, because this is actually his leadership challenge. This connection here is only possible because of Chief Corley Moore. So just want to say thank you for being here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And Corley's one of those guys, right? When he tells you, hey, you got to be on this podcast. Guess what? You go on the podcast and you go, you go right away. So, and I think I mentioned this to you off the show, right? That a lot of times before I go on a podcast, I'll make sure I listen to a couple of episodes. And there's so many great people out there doing amazing stuff. And now I know that you're one of them, because I said yes, and I had never listened to your podcast. But now I had a day where I binge listened to your podcast, and I was like, wow. I said, this is really good stuff. It's crazy. You know, all the years I got more than in between my career and volunteer service, I have more than four decades in the fire service. And it's just so enlightening and amazing when you find another like-minded individual doing great stuff like you are. And it's not like you started yesterday, right? You've been doing this for a while, and I still have about a dozen of your podcasts that I have highlighted that I'm gonna get to listening to.
Wow.
But there's so many good nuggets from great people that you've had on. So I appreciate I appreciate the opportunity. And yeah, I said yes as soon as Goalie Moore said do it, I'm doing it.
Well, thank you so much, Chief. That's truly humbling. So thank you so much for your support and your willingness to be here today. Before we get going, I understand June 27 is when you retired from the FDNY. Is that correct?
Yeah. So just over a week ago, I retired from the FDNY. So interestingly, I'll never retire from the fire service, right? I mean, it's I took a position as the managing director of the First Responder Center for Excellence, and that organization is near and dear to my heart. There, and if they're an affiliate of the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation. And they have several key areas that they focus in on. And it's behavioral health, cardiac, health and wellness and fitness, cancer, firefighter physicals, health, wellness, and nutrition. And you could lump in there safety, right? So that gives you the latitude to really talk about anything, promote programs and training and research. And that's what we do. And I when I mentioned the National Fallen Firefighter Foundation, and there, the CEO of them is Victor Stagnaro. He oversees the First Responder Center for Excellence as well. And I say they do such a great job dealing with our families after a firefighter passes away. And I say the FRCE's job is to make sure that the NFFF never gets to meet your family, that we make it where you live longer than you may if you wind up with occupational cancer, or suicide is prevalent in our profession and in law enforcement, and you know some of the things that we can do to make our beloved profession even better, right? And that's kind of the goal, which is why I took on this position, because I've worked with them almost since their inception. The FRCE, you know, First Responder Center for Excellence, has been around since 2016. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with them in some capacity, either doing videos or in a consultant role on some of their projects for the past 5 or 6 years. So it's in alignment with my brand, my message about making sure that, you know, the job of an older firefighter is to make sure that a younger firefighter becomes an older firefighter. And how do you do that? Well, you have to be brilliant at the basics. Obviously, they could kill you today, but we also have to make sure that we're taking care of our future self, that our health, that way we can live long, as Dr. Spock would say, live long and prosper. That's the idea, right? Is to, you know, do a 30 or 40 year career and then have a 30 or 40, maybe even 50 year retirement. For any of your listeners that are interested in learning about the First Responder Center for Excellence, they could go to firstrespondercenter.org. That's the name, First Responder Center, and then .org. And you can see all the different things that we're doing. Whenever we have new training on either on our LMS platform or when we're doing in person, you could find it all there. And, you know, the classes are free of charge.
Yep.
We can bring a one-day program to your department. You know, that there's a course associated with that. But most departments that host those, they wind up covering the course. And then some, and it becomes a fundraiser for them. And they wind up with four top-notch instructors speaking on relevant topics to today's, you know, today's fire service.
Yeah, so the First Responder Center for Excellence. So where is this located?
So their headquarters in Crofton, Maryland, which is where the NFFF is.
Okay.
Yeah, but we're everywhere, right? So wherever our training program is, wherever research in the fire service is going on, we have relationships with the University of Arizona, Skidmore College, just all over the place. University of North Carolina, University of Florida. Wherever research is being done, we are involved in supporting that. And we're also developing and putting out training for firefighters to make sure that when we talk about mental health, right, that we want to preload firefighters with the ability to understand and manage what they may see in their career. And we're in the process of building out so many other new programs for a recruit fitness, what a 28-day program that you should have before you come into a department. And this will be on our LMS. That'll be free of charge. We're doing that with a grant through Skidmore College,
Okay.
and you know, the wonderful collaboration that we're doing with them, and Heart Fit for Duty, and they're out in Mesa, California. So
Okay.
we have partners all over the place. I like to say, so we're the Switzerland. We collect everything and disseminate it and make it. What's the best message? What is the best training that we could provide to educate and make sure that firefighters, our ultimate end user, is better, right? So they're the you know, for lack of a better word, our main customer is making sure our firefighters are healthy and safe and live long and prosper.
And I just want to clarify, Chief, this is not the IAFF Center of Excellence, but a completely different organization. Yes.
Yeah. So that's a whole nother entity, not associated with us.
Right.
So that's the Center for Public Excellence, I think, where you could go in. They have treatment programs and stuff. That's not us. They do great work as well.
Yes.
But they're not associated with the First Responder Center for Excellence.
Okay. Absolutely. I'm on the website now, and wow, this is there's talk about a tremendous amount of resources for individuals: behavioral health, cancer, cardiac, physicals, health and wellness, nutrition, fitness. Wow.
Yeah, and we're in the process of building out each of those. The cancer one, for example, if you were doing research. A research paper, or you wanted to print out some documents to hang in the firehouse. There's over 100 different resources on cancer alone. When you look at all the videos we have dozens of videos that you can use for drill, you know, and just put on a video, right? But people say, I don't know what to drill on, which is crazy, right? There's a thousand things to drill on without even talking about, you know, your mental and physical well-being,
right?
Just all the basics. But and that's what we want to do, right? We want to be a resource where somebody could go one-stop shopping. Hey, I want to do an online class, a stress first aid class, or other ones that we have.
Yeah.
Or I want to host an in-person class or just attend an in-person class. We have all of that available for, you know, for anybody who wants to take it. And our eventual plans that we're working on is also having classes that our families can take, because
yes.
A firefighter, the first responder for the responder is their family. Mm-hmm. Your family member, your wife, your spouse, your children, they are going to notice a change in you long before anybody else will, because they spend intimate time with you more so than even your crew at the firehouse. So we want to make sure that we're able to educate those people to better help their loved ones.
Wow. This is truly amazing. As you were saying all of that, I was clicking through exactly what you just said, and there is a ton of, for example, a YouTube video or an article or something. So it's funny how, you know, we're going to get into this heavily today, a training. It's funny how you say, you chuckled a little bit about if you don't know what to train on today, because there's a million things you could train on. But talk about just having a resource right in front of you to sit down and read yourself, listen to yourself as a crew on topics that, you know, we can all learn more about. You know, I'm sitting here looking at mental health, cancer, fitness, nutrition. And so for all the listeners, firstrespondercenter.org is a First Responder Center for Excellence that the chief is talking about. So
later this week, I'll be working with the with NIOSH and the Firefighter Cancer Registry. We'll be making a couple of videos at my volunteer firehouse, the East Farmingdale Volunteer Fire Department. And there'll be some film crews there. We're going to make some videos to encourage everybody to join the National Cancer Registry, both whether you're in the fire service currently or even if you've been previously in the fire service, because we got to get people, because it's all about data-driven decision-making. And, you know, when you think of size up on the fire ground, right, that data that we get is so important. You do your 360, the information that you get is going to determine what strategies and tactics you employ. That's the same thing when we look at the cancer registry. We think we know, but we need to know more about occupational cancer, especially, you know, our retired members or the volunteer members where they move away and we don't capture that. Well, this will give researchers the information that they need to make better decisions, to make better informed decisions that are going to impact us and the future generations of firefighters. I like to say, you know, we are always looking to leave our job, the fire service, better than we found it, right?
Yep.
That's the goal. You know, and it's, when's the best time to plant a tree? 20 years ago. The second best time is today, because someone will enjoy the shade of that tree 10, 15 years from now. And that's the moment in time we find ourselves right now with the Firefighter Cancer Registry. We need to help ourselves. First responders, firefighters have an opportunity to help themselves and future firefighters by enrolling, giving them the information that they need, so that way they can help us and future generations of firefighters. It's that simple.
Yes.
It takes under half an hour to sign up. Little things like that. And we'll be promoting that on the First Responder Center for Excellence website as well. There's some stuff on there on how to join the registry now. But yeah, we want to get as many people to sign up for that as well.
So I'm glad how you mentioned that right here. My next question was, how do we sign that up, or where is that resource going to be found? But it is going to be found on the website itself.
Yeah, and if you Google NIOSH Firefighter Registry, it'll come up. Come up pretty easily. But yeah, you'll see some videos. There's already some campaigns on social media about it. I just saw one featuring Billy Goldfeder from The Secret List. I saw him doing one, urging people to join.
Awesome. Well, there you go. There's the first challenge of the day, Chief. On the show, we talk about challenges, challenging individuals to do this or that. There's the first challenge. The National Firefighter Registry, they can enroll right now through that, correct? It's the CDC, is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly correct. Yep, that's exactly right. And we need firefighters to sign up, because this has been out for almost a year now. And, we haven't done a good job of helping ourselves by enrolling. And we need to step it up and encourage firefighters to do it. Have contests. You can become a gold helmet department, where if a majority of your department signs up, or a certain number, depending on the size of your department, you get a little designation by NIOSH, and you're helping the fire service. So
yes, you're helping the
beloved profession.
Okay. First challenge of the day, listeners, cdc.gov, the National Firefighter Registry. You can register now. First Responder Center for Excellence will have the same resource or a similar resource, Chief, just to clarify.
Yeah, there'll be a link to it. Yep. So it's the same resource, but there'll be a link to it. And again, it takes under a half an hour to sign up. And for you chiefs out there, make it part of your new recruits coming into the department, or have a contest where everybody that does it, they'll be entered into a raffle and give them a gift certificate to something, or give them a piece of equipment or whatever. So come up with something to make it where members enroll.
Yeah.
So the gauntlet has been dropped. The challenge, first challenge of the show has been dropped.
There you go. The first challenge of the show has been dropped. Thank you, Chief, for that. So Cornerstones of Leadership, Chief. So I love this. I love the book, number one, but I love the three main topics or pillars, if you will. Could you talk training, you talk teamwork, you talk mentorship. So I'm just going to kind of lob it out there, Chief, and let you run with Cornerstones of Leadership and those three topics, if you will.
Yeah, so Pete Matthews, the editor of Firehouse Magazine, asked me to be the keynote for Firehouse Expo in 2022. And I did it. It was an amazing experience. Anytime you have the opportunity to keynote a major conference is an honor, right? And a privilege. So the title of that was Fire Service Cornerstones of Success, Training and Teamwork and Why It Matters on Game Day. For several years now, I've had people tell me, you got to write a book about your experiences, because I've operated on the scene of, or been the incident commander at many different incidences that could be considered career fires. And I always push back about it. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. And then after the keynote, I had a lot of people telling me, you got to take the keynote and put it into a book. My good friend Chris Stewart, who at the time was a high level chief in the Phoenix Fire Department, he said to me, he said, you got to read Wisdom of the Bullfrog. And I read the book. It's about a 90 minute read. Great book. And he was like, that's kind of like the model for your book about what your keynote. And again, I had so many other people that were encouraging me to write a book. Sarah Jenke of NDRI was another. She's a researcher. And she was really pushing me to write the book. Other people were. And after that, I started to see the vision that, okay, I can do this. So I took the book. I took the keynote, wrote it all out, and then chunked it into chapters, filled in other areas, and suddenly I saw a roadmap for what this book would look like. And I was using the same title of the book, and my son, who was instrumental in me even getting the book over the finish line, without him, there would be no book. He's just brilliant. But he said to me, he's like, the necessarily the cornerstones of success. He said, they're the cornerstones of your leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, that's the training, the teamwork, and the mentorship. And that's really how the title changed from the 2022 keynote to what the title of the book was. And that was a total mind shift of how the book would be laid out, that any chapter that was going to be in the book had to have relevant teaching points. Because it's, so what? I have experiences that I've been to fires, I've been somewhere. It's the equivalent of 50 first dates unless you cull something out of it, right? Yeah. So if I couldn't pull a leadership principle out of it, then I wasn't going to include it in the book. And there were chapters, there were two chapters actually, that my son said, hey, Dad, these chapters don't belong in the book. They might go in another book down the road, but they don't go with the message of the rest of the book. And I was like, but I love those chapters. And, you know, some of them were a little more technical, right? Because this is more a leadership book about people that have taught me, that have guided me, what I've learned in my career. It's really, the book's not about me. It's about all of those people. And it's leadership using fire stories to tell leadership stories is really what it is. So I'm not teaching you how to stretch a hose line or how to force a door or how to put up a towel ladder. There's plenty of great books out there that teach you that. But this is some of those leadership skills, those soft skill leadership skills that we all know that boss, that when, you know, they are tactically brilliant, but boy, do they suck with bedside manners, right? And you pull up to the firehouse and you're like, oh, man, I'm going to have to work with this officer tonight. I hope they have their medication, right? Because you never know what they're going to get. They're all over the map. They have no bedside manners. And you think, I would follow this guy in a fire or girl in a fire, but I wouldn't want him over my house. I wouldn't want to be their friend. And the true inspirational leadership in every industry knows how to marry the soft skill leadership mm-hmm. with the hard skill tactical leadership. And that's the difference, really, yes. Because we and the fire service has so many great tacticians.
Yes, agreed.
Right? And so many great strategic thinkers. But the true leader is able to marry. When you think about the people that you want to emulate and be like, they understand soft skill leadership. Now, they may not call it soft skill leadership, servant leadership, whatever term you want to give it. But that's what they're showing you.
Yes.
And that's the difference. Because I know tons of people where I'm like, boy, if you just knew how to talk to people, if you knew how to connect with people, you'd be brilliant. And I get more emails asking me to go and speak nowadays about soft skill leadership than I do about other topics. Right. It's because people are realizing it. Departments are realizing that in many cases is the missing link, because none of this, you have to have competency in whatever industry we're talking about. Without competency, we don't even have a foundation to build off of. Right. So all the other stuff, I say, if we're talking about soft skill leadership, we are ready to the point where we know we have somebody who has competency. If you're going to get your firefighters injured and killed on the fire ground, I don't care if you know how to talk to them when you're in the fire station. We got to make sure that we are keeping them alive on the fire ground, and that you are tactically and strategically superior, because that is what matters on game day. When the tones drop, the time to prepare is over.
Yes. Those hard skills, if you will. I mean, that's what the fire academy is about, right? It's what your apprenticeship is about, probationary period, you're early in your career. And as we talk about leadership, we just talk about developing leaders, if you will. It doesn't have to be a promoted officer. It could be just anybody, you know, as they build themselves up, that soft skill becomes a necessity, but it becomes more pronounced, if you will. Or I love that you mentioned soft skills, because we talk about that on this show. We talk about soft skill versus hard skill leadership. So my question is, when did you recognize that soft skills, like, right? Because there comes a point where someone will be like, soft skills, what are you talking about? Like, why do I need to learn communication and emotional intelligence, self-awareness? Why do I need to learn that stuff? But you recognize that as a leader, you recognize that, you know that. But first of all, when did you learn that? But also how, like, for example, we'll use the FDNY as an example. Is there curriculum, if you will, is there training on soft skill development in their people?
Yeah. So great questions. Let me peel this onion back a little bit. Yeah. So one of the things you said a couple of minutes ago was that it doesn't matter if you're an officer. So Right. So a senior firefighter, or even if he's not a senior firefighter, we need to start baking into our training leadership and soft skills at our earliest levels. So think about, you know, because of one of the firefighters, if you hired 30 firefighters in the past year, right, one of those firefighters in 20 years is going to be a leader in your organization. Now, one of them is going to be a leader as a senior firefighter. One's going to be a leader as a lieutenant. One's going to be a leader as a battalion chief. One's going to be a leader as the head of your department, you know, as the chief of your department.
Agreed.
So have we made sure that we baked in all of that? Because it is a force multiplier. When we train somebody that's younger in the organization, soft skill leadership, leadership skills, that has a career-long impact in how they operate. And oftentimes, we're aware of soft skill leadership, but we haven't labeled it.
Yes.
Because from the earliest days as a firefighter, I think about my earliest days and chief officers that I saw, and there wasn't servant leadership when I came on the fire department. I rarely would talk to the battalion chief, you know, when he would visit. I was afraid to talk to him, and he was very fine not talking to me as well. And then as you progress, and as my career progressed, servant leadership and the approachability of chiefs has greatly changed from the beginning of my career to today. And so to answer your question, when did I become aware of it? I think I've always been aware of it, but I didn't know what it was. So it's when I realized that there's a label for that. And those are the individuals that I try and be like. And I think about mentors in my career that I speak about in my book, that I spoke about in the keynote. All of these are people that have that total package of, you know, they were approachable. They understood, you know, they asked you how you were, how your family was. They knew more about you. And that was the stuff that I wanted to do. As a lieutenant, I would regularly do things with my firefighters, and I knew their families, and we would hang out and we would do trips and stuff like that. You know, we would train hard in the firehouse, and we would make sure that we did things together and partied hard and did things together as a family, because those are things I always did as a firefighter. I always had close relationships with the firefighters that I worked with and their families. But when you become a boss, when you become a leader, some people think that you then can't have that connection, which could not be further from the truth.
Agreed.
So I've recognized it for the majority of my career, the importance of it, didn't know what it was called, but I have always, since a lieutenant, I've emulated myself to try and be like those people. So, and as a lieutenant, you think about the better connected you are to your team, the better they are going to function. And when you look at the Fortune 500 of businesses out there, just about all of them, they have softball leagues, bowling leagues, volleyball leagues, different. They have company functions and parties and stuff. That is all about team building. The company doesn't care if you win in the volleyball tournament, because the company wins because you're hanging out and you're fostering relationships within the company. That is good for business. That is good for the fire service. A close-knit bunch will operate superior when the tones drop.
Agreed.
There's just, I have witnessed that time and time again in my career. And I've worked in, I'm proud to say that I've worked in some many firehouses that have been very diverse. And we have gotten along with our brothers and sisters at every single rank and every single place that I've worked, because it's about making sure that you operate as a unit, as an inclusive unit. Because if you show up, and I was in a single engine as a lieutenant, and if we show up and we're operating on us by ourselves, right, and I have one person that we've excluded, we are significantly weaker.
Yes.
So you're only as strong as your weakest link. So there's no way I'm going to allow somebody to fall through the cracks or not be part of the team, or that we're going to ignore them. They are a critical link in our success.
Yes.
So it doesn't matter the reason. It doesn't matter when we talk about diversity and inclusion. So diversity to match what your demographics of your city, your community look like. There's people working to make that happen. When they get to the firehouse, that is on us. That is on each of us to make sure that that takes place. And that begins with the leader saying, we are going to train together. We are going to be together because we are going to operate cohesively on the fire ground, because that's where our responsibility to each other and to the community that we serve demands it.
Yeah.
There's simply no room to exclude somebody in training and on the fire ground. There's no room for that.
I'm going to come right back to diversity inclusion, because that's a highlight. And I love that piece that you talked about in your book and the piece that you just talked about. Before I go there, I feel like this is going to be a day of challenges on this show between you and I. So the challenge number two is, talked about the soft skills, how do we, as individuals, as leaders, wherever any of our listeners are at in their career as they listen to this, how do we get the individuals to, first of all, recognize that soft skill leadership is a must in their development, right? In addition to, not instead of, but in addition to their hard skill development, as we know, being competent on the fire ground, right? You talked about competency, the hard skills of the job. But how do we get individuals and leaders to recognize that soft skills is a must? We need to start developing ourselves now, but challenge those individuals in recognizing or making that a priority in their development.
So I would say, look to your mentor and see what your mentor was about. Did your mentor have the ability to talk to other firefighters? He obviously had the ability, or she had the ability, to communicate with you, right? Whoever your mentor is. And think about the people that you've tried to emulate yourself. Just look at a reflection of yourself, and chances are your mentor had the complete package. And I talk about mentor and training lineage often when I speak, because we want people that are into the job, that are knowledgeable, tactically and strategically superior, right? That's important. But that's on and off the fire ground, right? Which is why that became part of the title of the book, because your actions on the fire ground are, and what happens on the fire ground, and the groundwork is laid for that long before the tones go up. That is all of that inside the firehouse stuff. That is all the team building that happens at the bowling alley, on the fire, you know, on the volleyball court, at the baseball game, whatever it is that you're doing. That's where all of that is being built upon. That lays the foundation for success when the tones drop. And that's why I say every business understands that.
Yeah.
You know, that supports these things, and they recognize the investment. The fire service needs to recognize the investment in that and saying, yes, obviously we have to be brilliant at the basics. You get killed tomorrow if you don't know what you're doing. You get killed in 10 minutes if you don't know what you're doing. But not knowing, you know, not having those soft skill leadership, that is an additional investment. And some departments don't want to invest the money in that. But what they fail to recognize is they wind up investing the money at some point anyway.
Yes.
Because they're going to wind up getting lawsuits, and they're going to wind up getting into hot water in other ways. And Kurt Verone, one of the leading lawyers in the fire service, he will tell you, and he told me this. I was on a stage with him, a round table not too long ago. And he said upwards of 80% of litigation in the fire service is directly related to soft skills. You know, and you think about that, and we spend a lot of time
enormous.
In the firehouse. We spend a lot of time team building, all of that, but we don't spend the time or the money or effort to train our people in those skills. And we should do a better job, and we need to label it that, yes, these are soft skill leadership. These are the soft skill traits that make the difference between a good leader and an inspiring leader, right?
Totally.
Someone who inspires you to action. I think about people that I did not want to disappoint them because they cared for me. They had a high standard. They held me accountable. They understood how to talk to me. And like, you just gravitate to those people.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that have steered me in my career. In my career, I have been blessed in both in my volunteer and in my my career. I have had exceptional leaders.
Yeah.
And it's been, especially when we're talking about uniform leadership, you know, in the FDNY, we have a deep bench. So there's plenty of, you know, I've been exposed to a lot of really good leadership throughout my career, and I have formed myself based on taking a little bit from each person and making my, you know, and that's my become my leadership style.
A question I have on that, Chief, we just talked about mentorship, leadership, and FDNY being deep on the bench. I love that analogy, by the way. How does mentorship take place at the New York City Fire Department? Is there, how does that mentorship happen there?
So mentorship in the FDNY is simply ingrained in our DNA. It is just part of what we do. We are mentored from the very first time we walk into the firehouse. I think it's one of the greatest attributes of the FDNY is our ability to mentor the next generation of firefighters, of leaders. There's never a shortage of people that want to help you. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, what are some of the ways that takes place, whether formally or informally?
Yeah, and a large portion of it is informally.
Right.
It's the your first day in the firehouse, and the new, you know, the senior firefighter or the firefighters that are working, they're immediately training you. It's my first, the first time I wasn't even working yet, and I got assigned to my company, and I walk in the door, and the captain who's working, he sits me down and he starts going over stuff, and he's telling me, you know, you read something fire. He gave me two pieces of advice that were fantastic that I've done forever. Read something fire related every single tour. And the other thing was learn something from everyone you meet. Sometimes you'll learn what not to do.
Yes.
And those two pieces of advice have stuck with me my entire career. You know, and nowadays with podcasts and YouTube and all these different things, ebooks, there is so much information out there that there's no reason to not read or listen to something fire related every single day. And with the exception of a couple of months following September 11th, for obvious reasons, I have done that nonstop. And I have mentored people, and I've just been around people where they're just always trying to make you better. You get promoted to lieutenant, and other people that are officers, they call you up and they want to offer you help. When I get promoted to the chief of the fire academy, many of the former chiefs of the fire academy called me up or emailed me, and I had conversations or lunch with each of them to go over different things that I should need to know for how to do my job. When I went to the chief of training, same thing. When I went to the chief of safety, people that were in the safety command and were chief of safety, some of them I didn't even know, reached out to me. And we had conversations about things that I need to look out for. And that happens. That's the informal way that happens. And that's why I say it's ingrained in our DNA.
Yeah.
In the formal process, every single rank that you get promoted, you get go offline and you go to a class anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. So
wow.
Every single rank, and the one exception to that is when you get promoted to deputy, a deputy chief goes offline for 1 week and you have conversations about different things that you need to know. And there's no shortage of people who want to teach in those classes. So they'll bring in a bunch of different other deputy chiefs or staff chiefs
wow.
to let you know the leader's intent in a very informal setting. And all of these passing of ideas happens. And that is the formal way, but it is absolutely ingrained in the DNA of the FDNY. Because here's the bottom line. When you graduate the fire academy and you go to a firehouse, and then you get detailed from one firehouse to another, or you get promoted, everybody asks you, they want to know your pedigree. Where'd you get promoted out of? No one asks where'd you go. No one asks about the fire academy. So if you suck, they're going to blame, well, that's because of the company he came from. Or that company has a great reputation for training their people. And they realize that, so you get that benefit of the doubt right away. Then you build upon or screw that up right away on the first run you have. But you know, no one blames the fire academy. Everybody looks to where you worked. Where are you assigned? And that's the importance of it. And
wow, that's
the
powerful.
FDNY firefighter, from the probie firefighter to the senior firefighter on the job. In fact, our retired members, because when I got promoted to the chief of the fire academy in particular, many of the people who contacted me that held that position were people that were retired, that were no longer working. But they care about the FDNY and they care about the success and that mentorship. It doesn't, you could retire. Like, you know, I'm retired now from the FDNY for a little over a week, but you'll never leave the FDNY family. No matter what, to the day you die, you are part of the FDNY family.
Yeah.
It's why we're buried in our uniform.
Yeah.
It's because it is unlike any other profession on the planet. that you never, you could be a retired firefighter, right? Like, there's no such thing as a former Navy SEAL. There's no such thing as a former FDNY firefighter. They could retire, but you never leave that. You never leave that fraternity. Never.
Yeah, that's powerful, Chief. I want to lean on something very briefly here because I love it. It sounds like it was ownership a lot of the time. You said when you get a new rookie that goes to a new tour, to a new station, if you will, if they suck, just to be quite frank, kind of using the words that you used, it's not because of the academy. There was no, it's ownership in that crew, knowing that if a crew received an individual, it was on them to do 100% everything that they needed to do to mentor, to develop that individual. But one thing, and I love that, but one thing I want to lean on just very briefly here, Chief, because you just gave a very, very important nugget, if you will, nugget or concept, philosophy, whatever you want to call it. I mean, let's just, the FDNY is a little bit busier than my department, right? Let's just throw that out there. I mean, obviously a lot busier. One can argue that the on-the-job training, the on-the-job learning from the mentorship informally for the new members at any rank was going to happen because of the natural leaders. You mentioned leadership on the bench. There's so many leaders in your organization, the DNA that was in the DNA of the ability to mentor. But the FDNY still took people off the line when they promoted to put them in a 6-week-ish, right, into training. So can you talk a little bit about that? Because I will say there aren't many fire departments, at least around here, that do that. You get promoted, you're in your spot, it's on-the-job training. We don't get put aside, here's 2 weeks, 4 weeks, 6 weeks of training, tactics, soft-skill leadership, hard-skill leadership. We don't get to get perspectives from outside and inside perspectives. Talk about intentional development. So can you talk about that and the effectiveness of that at the FDNY?
So you should be training your members for a leadership position, right? Because, you know, and I think that's the gap that podcasts and stuff like this fill, is because in the smaller departments, in the FDNY, we have lots of mentors inside the department, and we have lots of different leaders that we can lean on to teach. But the value of externally, you know, looking externally and finding different leaders that you can listen to or try and emulate or take different styles or tactics from them is so valuable. But you should find a way to send your, even if you send them away, there's enough leadership classes out there that you can send your leaders to different classes if you think you're too small to host one yourself. But it's invaluable, because think about, you come out of probie school in the FDNY or anywhere that you come out, we don't give you a 10-year seasoned firefighter. We give you a firefighter who's ready for day one. He's ready to operate, or she is ready to operate on day one. That doesn't mean they're going to be very good, right? They're an apprentice, as if, like, it takes years to become a journeyman electrician. Well, think about that as a firefighter. It takes years to become a journeyman firefighter, where you actually know your job. So that's why, like in the FDNY, we use the day tour to give you assignments. Like, if we're going to give you the outside vent, which is an individualistic position, a lot of thinking on your own. So we give it to you in the day, so we don't have to worry about the problems of nighttime. We make sure, but you ride with the inside team for a long time, and then you kind of graduate to those positions as you get some experience. But, you know, so, but that comes with time. And it sets in reps. And if you're not doing a lot of sets and reps, then you have to rely externally, and you have to make sure that you're reading, that you're drilling, that you're doing all the things that make you better. I often speak about that experiences are transferable. If you sit in a class or you listen to a podcast and we talk about an experience, to a great degree, that's transferable to you. That's now in your hard drive, mm-hmm. where when you get a similar situation, that you'll have an idea of how to handle it. Now, that could be on or off the fire ground. It doesn't matter. But we cannot allow departments to say, my department's too big, we can't do that. We can't allow, my department's too small, we can't do that. We have to minimize or eliminate the excuses and make sure that we're training our people to the best of our ability to make sure that they can operate not only on day one, but on day two, on day three, year four, and then giving them the tools throughout their career. It's a career-long learning process. Mm-hmm. A senior firefighter doesn't become a senior firefighter on day one, nor does a senior lieutenant become a senior lieutenant or a senior chief on day one. It is a lifelong, career-long progression of being better. If you're not a better version of yourself today than you were yesterday, you're doing something wrong.
Yes, agreed. Well, perfect transition. What's the winning mindset to Chief Lieb?
a can-do winning mindset of getting the job done. In the FDNY, we play to win on every run, every tour, every day. Losing's not an option. Losing's not an option. I've never met a firefighter that said, yeah, losing's an option in my department or on my shift. You know, some may say, yeah, my department might have a losing mindset, but I don't. Well, then that means your crew doesn't, your day doesn't. Wherever I'm working today is the best firehouse on the planet, period. I don't care what the reputation is. I don't care about any of that. I'm here. It's going to be the best. It's going to be the best. And we're going to do the job and we're going to do it right. And we're going to train because we're going to make sure that we are better. And that's because I've had leaders young in my career that they came in, even though they weren't assigned to my firehouse, they came in and showed that they care for us, that they love us by training us and making us better by taking ownership in us and understanding that they are part of the FDNY. And today they're working in this part of that, in that part of the FDNY. That is the winning mindset, that can do, get it done, that we are going to win. We are going to save lives. We are going to be trained to be the best aggressive and safe firefighter that we can.
Wow. Question out of curiosity is how effective or influential were individuals, we'll just say at the lower ranks at the FDNY, say you had a firefighter, a newer firefighter, an engineer, if you will, that was such go-getters, you know, had the exact mindset you're talking about, winning mindset. They went to on a tour to a different station or floated in because they were on overtime or shift trade or shift exchange or whatever it may be, and say that other crew wasn't as, how influential or powerful were some of the members able to positively influence or affect those above them and say, hey, we're bringing the winning mindset. We are the best firehouse today. Here we are. Were individuals able to migrate and do that on different shifts and stuff like that?
Yes. At every rank and every firehouse I've worked in, there were people that absolutely emulate and live the FDNY way, the winning mindset way, and make it where they know they're part of the FDNY, you know, the greatest organization on the planet, in my biased opinion. But they knew that, yeah, today they're going to impact their crew and the people that they're sworn to protect by doing their job and doing it the most efficient and aggressive and safe way that they can. And I could name hundreds of people that fit that description because, you know, not only is the leadership in the FDNY have a deep bench, but the level of our training and expertise in our firefighters is equally, probably even deeper than that. And never underestimate the ability of an FDNY firefighter.
Oh,
I certainly haven't, because they constantly show you how good we can be.
Yeah. Oh, that's so powerful right there. Leading from where you're at, we talk about on this show, right? Doesn't matter where you rank, a firefighter can be just as powerful, if not more influential, than any other rank in the organization. So I love that. All right. I said we'd come back, and here we are. Diversity and inclusion, Chief. We talked, or you mentioned earlier about, you know, organizations need be diverse and include those members with their voices. They're a part of the team. The FDNY or yourself, even, Chief, would never have someone a part of the team not be included because otherwise you're not taking advantage of the strength of that the individual brings. So can you talk about, and we've used this, I saw this in your book, diversity is being invited to the party, for example, while inclusion is being asked to dance, right? Inclusion is having everyone being valued. They're not just physically there. So can you talk about, in your eyes, the importance of diversity and inclusion when it comes to building an effective organization, but building an effective team?
Yeah, and inclusive leadership, igniting team performance is the title, chapter 8 in the book, and where it talks about that. And the experience I use in the book is, I'm a lieutenant, and I have a lot of firefighters that are working in the company that are of Latino descent. And we would talk, and I told them, because they would say, hey, we're going to have a tour when only the Latino firefighters are working with you, and we're going to show you, we're going to have a meal based on all of the meals that we've learned and everything. And I was like, I was all for it, because these guys are good cooks. So the day happened, I didn't even know it was happening. And I come in the morning, and the first thing we have is we have Cuban coffee of some sort. They brought in their grandmother's coffee maker, and they made some awesome coffee. And the next thing you know, throughout the day, the meals that we had were all about meals that they had in their childhood. And the next thing you know, they're talking about their great grandmother's recipe or different things, or where they grew up or where the family grew up. And I realized I knew so little. I knew so little about my firefighters. And you know, I love these guys. I work with them all the time. I would do anything for them, and they knew that. And it was just, I learned so much about them and their culture. And we were already a high-functioning team. We would go to fires. This is where, again, I was in engine 324. We were single engine. And, you know, I would joke around with them. Like, we're not waiting for the truck to show up to force the door. We're going to get in there and get after the fire if, you know, as soon as we can. And multiple times that we would do that. We were a high-functioning engine company. I remember one time we had a fire on the fourth floor of an H-type multiple dwelling. Before the truck got there, before any other units got there, we had already stretched the line up. It was a well hole, so we didn't need as much hose to get up there. I had forced the door. We found a victim. We pulled the victim out, and we had water on the fire before anybody else got there. And that was just an exceptional example of our inclusive firehouse, that every single person was valuable and played an important role in what we were doing. And when you live that, you know, and when you embody that, people get it, right? And they want to perform even better. Now, you know, the firefighters that I had were all into the job, you know, so I get it. There's sometimes other administrative challenges that you can have with members. But when it comes to being a part of the team, and part of the team means, so we're going to have fun. We're going to cook together. We're going to have great meals. We're going to have a good time. We're going to party hard. We would go with the families. We'd go to baseball games, hockey games, all these different things. We had bowling nights out. We did all of that. And then in the firehouse, we had lots of fun. But we trained hard. Mm-hmm. And everybody was expected to be a member of the team. And if you didn't, then you should probably find a different firehouse. Mm-hmm. And I talk about that. I said, be the salt. Be the salt in your organization, in your department. Because what we want to get rid of, no slugs. And, you know, slugs don't like salt. As a kid, I remember seeing the little slugs around, right? You put salt near them. They avoid the salt. So be the salt in your department, in your organization, in your company. Influence your sphere of influence. Do what you can to make that the best place that there is to work anywhere. It doesn't matter. Yeah. And if you do that, you will build an inclusive culture, a high performing culture where everybody is on the same team. Because at the end of the day, everybody wants to be part of a winning team.
Yes.
Everybody. And when it comes to diversity and inclusion, I didn't have a great handle on that. And I relied on Dina Alley and Wendy Starr. So Dina Alley is a battalion chief in Raleigh, North Carolina. And Wendy Starr at the time worked for the FDNY. She just got a new position. So she was in our diversity and inclusion, our D&I office. And I had them review that chapter to make sure that I wasn't off base, because, you know, you don't have to have all the subject matter expertise, but you should make sure that you have people that do that surround yourself. I often say, if I'm the smartest person in the room, I'm in the wrong room. I want people who are going to challenge me to be better. And I know significantly more about diversity, inclusion, and the process. I know significantly more about mental health and some of these other challenges because of people that I've surrounded myself with. And Dina Alley's one of them. She's someone who we just hired at the First Responder Center for Excellence, who's gonna run some of our programs when it comes to the behavioral health side of things. So again, it's surrounding yourself, build a winning team, make sure that everybody's included, and you can't go wrong. And I'm building a winning team now at the First Responder Center for Excellence, building that out, because one of the things that I needed was a deep bench, and I'm starting to get a deep bench. As you'll see, we start bringing on new people to be part of our team.
Oh, I love that. So I have a question, two-part question, Chief. Is diversity and inclusion necessary for a strong team or organization? But also, secondly, are there people still not included? Meaning, like, are there people on crews? Are there individuals that don't feel included? And if that's the case, here's another challenge. I said today was all about challenges. Challenge our leaders to foster an environment to where we do include more voices of people to the table, so they are given their all to be a part of that team.
Yeah, and I think so. Folks need to have a seat at the table for sure. And I think about in different communities I worked in. When I worked in 324 Engine, it was a predominantly Spanish speaking area. In fact, I was so frustrated on runs when I didn't have a Spanish speaking firefighter working. I didn't speak Spanish that during my time there. I took a Spanish class. It was Spanish for firefighters. And in a very short period of time, I was able to communicate with the Spanish speaking people of my area in Corona, Queens. And, you know, sometimes they thought I understood Spanish better than I did, because I would start asking, you know, how they're feeling. And the next thing you know, they would be talking so fast. I'd be like, I don't understand anything you just said. You know, because when I got to that area, what did I know? I knew, Bomberos, a fuego, fuego, you know, mucho That's caliente. Right. That was like all I knew. You know, if they're having a heart attack, that doesn't help. And I did not like the feeling of helplessness that I had. And I was able to better serve the community that I was working in, but by being able to understand simple things in Spanish. Unfortunately, I didn't stick with it. My next assignment was not in a predominantly Spanish-speaking area. So I think in the FDNY, we see that newer firefighters that come on now, they have paid attention to putting, you know, if you speak Chinese, you're going to be in an area that has a high Chinese population. And, you know, I look at Queens. Like, Queens is the most diverse place on the planet. Like, there's a small stretch where I was a lieutenant and where I was a battalion chief. It is considered the most diverse area on the planet, with over 140 languages spoken. Mm. So some of them are just small dialect changes, but you know, so it's impossible to do all you can. But yeah, and listen, learning about my firefighters and making sure that we have an inclusive team is vitally important to any organization. It doesn't matter what organization it is, because it's going to impact you on and off the fire ground or in any other profession. So yeah, having a voice at the table significantly matters.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so here we go, Chief. Non-negotiable. Obviously, Chief, you've served with over 40 years in the fire service, with over 30 at the FDNY, held many ranks. There's obviously many things, but if there was one non-negotiable item for you in terms of, you know, whether it be building a strong team, being an inclusive leader, whatever it may be, what is something that is a must or must not do in regards to being an effective leader?
Competency. Know your job, do your job. You're the boss, act like it if you're the boss. And if you're a firefighter, know your job, do your job, because we're only as strong as our weakest link, and that matters. So competency trumps everything. After that, for me, I'm a big loyalty. I'm big into loyalty. I think loyalty matters. But competency wins the day every single day. You have to be training, because you're not getting better if you're not training and dedicated to your craft.
Simple. I like it. I heard you say this before. Make every day a training day, right? It doesn't have to be, you know, 16 hours of training. You could do a simple 20, 30, 40 minutes of just training, but make it a priority every single day to do something to become better.
Yep.
All right, let's go to this. We'll go to just some rapid fire type stuff, Chief. We talked about books earlier. I think we talked about some quotes. But in terms of leadership, what's your favorite book, Chief?
Oh, my goodness. There's so many good books out there. Yeah. But I tell you what, and it's not necessarily a leadership book.
Sure.
But it's more of a book that just teaches you to have – to just be – understand thinking a little bit. So I think Thinking Fast and Slow.
Oh, yes.
I think is a transformational book. I think that book is certainly one of my favorites, because it's at the end of the day, in a leadership position, emotional intelligence is so important, right? So in fact, emotional intelligence is important for anybody, regardless of your rank. But you have to know when to say something, when not to say something, when to take an action, when not to take an action, because those little things off the fire ground. You start a small brush fire, and the next thing you know, it's 400 acres because you opened your mouth when you should have thought for five more minutes or five more days. You know, because sometimes it takes a while. And I'll see that emotional intelligence takes takes many, many shapes and forms. And I'll be online and I want to reply to something or I'll write something down, whatever it is. And then I take it. I say, oh, that's good. And I take it. And I have a document on my desktop that's called the parking lot. And I just put all those thoughts in there. And I never post any of them because I would have posted not using emotional intelligence.
Yes.
And I think thinking fast and slow tells you about your system one, system two brain. I think that is just opens up a whole new area. But there's so many. There's so many books out there. So much great stuff.
Those are great. Yeah. So I'm going to have a quick question on emotional intelligence to the chief, because we talked about that. A few leaders have talked about emotional intelligence. But when you started your career in the fire service, how prevalent was emotional intelligence? I'm going to venture to guess not so much as it is today. But and then obviously now that we're in the 2024, obviously a lot more, I'm not even going to say more pertinent, because it was always pertinent back then, but it wasn't talked about. It wasn't researched as much. But so as far as emotional intelligence, how have you seen the necessity of it in terms of leaders? But then also, I don't even really know my question. It wasn't before, but now it is.
That's fantastic. I get exactly what you're saying. And I think so. Emotional intelligence was always important. But now what has happened is that the speed of information transfer is accelerated. So if you're not emotionally intelligent, the how fast the ramifications of that are. And we see that, right? We see that in today's fire service where someone puts out something and they're like, and I'll say, wow, they should have thought about that a little bit more, right? And there's multiple recent examples of that where the message may be good, but it should have been better refined, right? And I think that accelerated because of technology has accelerated that where, you know, you can get hammered very quickly for not having emotional intelligence inside and outside your department. So you have to be acutely aware of what you're saying and doing, especially the higher up in a leadership position, is because your megaphone is bigger. So when you say something that doesn't resonate well with the troops, well, they're going to spread it within their within the organization very quickly. And in minutes, it's going to be outside the organization. And the energy and effort to put that genie back in the bottle is you're better off making sure that you have some emotional intelligence and make sure that, you know, you're using the proper system. And that's why I think that thinking fast and slow really helps you with understanding how we think.
Oh, I love that. You are continuously learning still, Chief. You talked about learning something new every day, good or bad. Recently retired, but still moving forward, still learning. Please share the latest leadership lesson that you've learned even this far into your career.
Boy, there's several that I can go to with that. But I'll say, I think the greatest thing is not a new lesson, but it's something that people don't seem to realize. And I say the time that a chief, the greatest time that you could use as a chief officer is going and visit your companies. And show them that you care, right? But the other thing is, when you get to the firehouse, lead with fire. So, and what do I mean by that? Well, I loved as a firefighter when a battalion chief would show up and he would tell me about a fire that he went to last night. I didn't go to the fire, but I want that information. Because too often now, what you'll get is a chief who's either afraid to go visit his troops, or when he does, he talks about how you have to work overtime. He talks about how you didn't do the mandatory training. Or they talk about that you're some other nonsense, right? Or some other headquarters policy, which you have to speak about. I get that, right? But lead with fire. Show your people you care for them by leading with fire. Tell them about a fire. Talk about things that will get them injured or killed today. Thank them for their service. Thank them for what they did or whatever. Ask them, hey, you guys went to a serious fire last week. Anybody working for it? Oh, yeah, I was working, Chief. Great. Tell me about it. Oh, fantastic. Because then eventually, when you give them the information that you came to share, whatever that is, they get it. They get that you have responsibilities. But show them that you care, that you love them, that you lead with fire. I think that is the one thing I see in different organizations often where I think people could do Chiefs would have a better road ahead of them if they would just do that.
Great advice there, Chief. Thank you. All right. You have a firefighter, a new firefighter standing in front of you, Chief. They approached you and or a group of them, if you will. And you were going to give them advice on how to become a strong leader starting today and moving forward. What type of advice would you give that newer firefighter?
The same advice I got on day one. Read something fire-related every day. You're either getting better or worse. You're never staying the same. Take as many classes as you can. Don't say no when you're offered an opportunity to train. When you're offered any opportunity for any type of training. In my career, I've accepted every opportunity. You want to go be a hazmat instructor? You want to take a 80-hour chemistry of hazmat? Yeah, I'm in. You want to do this? Yeah, I'm in. Whatever it is. And next thing you know, right? So I took some of those early hazmat classes. Next thing you know, they have me teaching it. And, you know, any other opportunity, any classes that you have, be better every day. It's that simple.
Be better every day. Okay. An emerging leader. It could be a company officer, aspiring, newer officer, or someone that's been there a few years. They're standing in front of you, Chief, and you were going to give them some words of wisdom to grow as leaders. What would you tell them?
Be the boss. You're in that position for a reason. Be the boss. Own it. Own your seat. Know your job. And make sure that you're training your people every single day. So one of the challenges for a new boss is they want to be friends with the firefighters. And this is especially true if they were firefighters that you've previously worked with. And what they need is they need the boss. They need you to be the boss. They need you to be the leader. I have been friends with almost every leader that I've ever worked with. And that's how you influence up and down the chain of command when you do that as well. So be the boss, own your position, own your seat, know your job, do your job. That's what the firefighters need. And they will love you, respect you, and be your friend. That all follows when you do your job.
Awesome. All right, chief officers or senior members of organizations, you're talking to a group of them and you were going to offer some advice for them to continue to grow as leaders, right? To continue, we're not talking, you know, the end of their road, but they're still learning as well. What would you tell them?
Accountability starts with you. Similar in many regards to the company officer. Know your job, do your job, be the boss. Be consistent. That's important. Don't have your firefighters or people under your command do things that you wouldn't be willing to do yourself. Lead by example. I think if you hold yourself accountable, it's a lot easier. When you have a standard and you hold yourself accountable to that standard, and then you hold your firefighters accountable to a standard, that works well. When you don't have a standard for yourself and you try and hold accountability, firefighters see through bullshit. And that's even when you have leadership that is not up to par. Firefighters see that, and they see that very, very quickly. They sniff that out immediately. So accountability starts with you, but you also must have a standard and hold your people accountable. Your high performers want that. And I often say, hold your people accountable, have a high standard, show your people you love them by having a standard and holding them accountable, because that's what they need and that's what they want. And that's what their families want, because that's what ensures that they come home at the end of the tour, that they go to work, they saved lives, they've made a difference, and they came home at the end of the tour. That is the perfect scenario that we should all be striving for.
That's awesome. I usually ask this question as we close, Chief, how important or influential is the kitchen table? Well, I'm going to change it up a little bit. I don't know if it was Corley Moore that told me about this or another individual. They were talking about the FDNY tradition. And please correct me if I'm wrong, Chief. I'm still learning traditions of the fire service in different departments. But the tailboard of an engine after a fire, after a run, loading hose, is kind of that time to as Bill, I mentioned, we were talking about Bill earlier, the church on the tailboard, where you're out there, you're sharing stories, you're sweaty, you're dirty, you're having a good time. You're talking about the run and you're just sharing, laughing, crying, and doing all the above. So can you talk about the tailboard of an engine at the FDNY after a fire?
Yeah, absolutely. And as you said, right, there's no place like the kitchen table, right? Everything gets solved at the kitchen table over a cup of coffee. But the tailboard of the apparatus, especially at every rank, I've done that often at the end of a fire, end of a run. But I particularly enjoyed it as a battalion chief because I would get out of the car and I would walk to the back of the engine, even if they're not stretching a line. And we would just talk about, hey, if you had to stretch the line, where would you stretch it to? And what obstacles are you thinking about? Mm-hmm. Or even going to talk to people, talk to the first new ladder chauffeur and said, hey, man, I love the positioning of your ladder. What were you thinking on arrival? And then I would tell them what I'm thinking. And then they start to understand the leader's intent. But I also start to learn who my firefighters are. And they start to learn and think the way I am when I'm working of what my expectations are. So I'm setting expectations. We're talking about the fires. Now, after a working fire, the critique afterwards, as a chief officer, it would typically be the officers. But I've always loved talking to the youngest firefighters and try and impart some wisdom into them. Whatever it is, especially if I say, hey, is this your first fire? And they say, yeah. And I'm like, isn't this the greatest job on the planet? Right. And just start having those conversations with your people. The tail board is a very, very close second to the kitchen table. But in the FDNY, the other area is when we start packing our hose, is that everybody jumps on the hose. No one's ever asked. Everybody just jumps on the hose and they talk about family, they talk about the company, they talk about the job. They just, everybody's catching up. The different, the brother and sisterhood mm-hmm. is just, the bonds are strengthened during all of these different things that we do that are just part of the FDNY and or my volunteer department and the culture of the organization, because it's building culture in your organization. And isn't that what we want? We want to build a strong culture for our generation, for the next generation, to leave it better than it was, which is one of the first things we spoke about when we started this conversation.
Absolutely. One thing I want to ask, Chief, is leaders need to create organizational champions. Celebrate your people. I didn't want the day to go by without talking about that, because I love that chapter in your book, talking about appreciating your people. Saying a thank you goes a long way. In fact, you don't know how long or how far it goes to an individual's career, because sometimes you may not know the impact that you have as a leader. But can you talk about the leaders creating organizational champions?
Yeah, and so champions are born every day. And that could be at the fire academy when an instructor is teaching the new probies, and maybe somebody's struggling, and you just take the time. And I would tell the instructors at the fire academy, you don't always have to be the hammer, right? Especially our drill instructors. You don't always have to be the hammer. Someone's having a hard day. You don't know what's going on in their life. And where I see that, right? So they're a member of the FDNY. They're a member of our organization. They just happen to be a junior member of the organization. That doesn't give you the right to abuse them. Now, there's certain things we got to make sure that they're good. They got to get their training. That's for sure, right? So I'm not saying that. But understand that they're going to be a lifelong member of our organization. Is what you're doing going to make them better, going to make them stronger? Is it going to make them come back and say, that instructor made a difference? And I see this every single day at the fire academy, when somebody would a fire truck would come, and I'd see the members get out, and they would see an instructor, and they would line right for the instructor, and they'd give him a hug. And then I would walk over, because I spent a lot of time walking the grounds, and I would listen to the conversation, and it was, you were my instructor 4 years ago. That is a generational difference maker. When you impact firefighters from that great of a level. And I think about some of the instructors that I had. And I think about, so when I got out of probie school, I went to the 5-8 battalion. In that battalion was engine 283. And one of my instructors that, he didn't know it while we were in probie school, but he was just an exceptional teacher. This guy, Steve Humaninski. And he happened to be in my battalion. So when I got back, I saw him. And our drill instructor, Lieutenant McJunkin, he was hard on us in probie school. But then right after probie school, like towards the end, when he started to, ease up a little bit, and we had conversations, and he told us that he did it because he cared for us. And I remember working the tour with him, and what a great guy he was, because he made a positive impact. He didn't just abuse us for the sake of abusing us. He instilled what we needed to get instilled in us at the very youngest ages. So celebrate your people. I think about Medal Day, how the FDNY celebrates how we celebrate Medal Day. You know, I gave the Proby School as an example, but another example that I like to use is how we celebrate our people at Medal Day. When one of us succeeds, we all succeed. Medal Day is an organizational success for the FDNY. Every year in the FDNY, we make over 100 rescues from fires, right? The firefighter rescue survey, they're doing great work and have documented over 3,000, which we need to celebrate that, right? That is celebrating the wins, celebrating our champions. And it's just being better. And Medal Day, when everybody shows up, all the chief officers, everybody shows up and celebrates your people. It's just, like I said, organizational success. Because no one succeeds alone. It's the team that succeeds. Someone trained you, someone made you better. And it's the team. And too often we don't see that, but yeah, celebrate vigorously, celebrate the way the FDNY does. The FDNY Medal Day is one of the greatest traditions at the FDNY, or I would say even the greater fire that there would be in the entire fire service. And, you know, when Corley Moore was at Medal Day, afterwards, he said, how do you bottle this up and distribute this to every department in the country?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just so used to it because it's such a part of the FDNY culture that there's rarely a year that I miss Medal Day because it's celebrating the wonderful FDNY and the great people that we have working for us. It's
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's a privilege to serve.
Yeah,
it is a privilege to serve.
Yeah, not everybody gets the privilege or opportunity to. As far as Medal Day, Chief, is that I don't even know the right word, nominates and then gets voted on who wins the medal? Like, how is that all?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So there is it happens at the chief level. They decide if they want to have the people written up. And typically, if you save if you pull someone out, you're going to get written up. Then that packet goes to a group, and there's a group of five or six people that sit on the Medal Day board, and they'll decide which ones are going to be awarded a medal. What classification? There's a whole grading system, and then at the end of the year, they look at everything and they decide who gets the who's actually going to go to Medal Day, who's going to be awarded a medal, and that is it's such a difficult decision. I've sat on that board a couple of times. Because there's so many great acts that are worthy and deserving of it. Because in the FDNY, we save lives every single day in the FDNY. Whether it's on a fire call, whether it's doing CPR, whether it's from a car accident, right? So game day comes at a moment's notice. Game day for somebody, for a resident, is anytime they call 911. So when you look at the totality, we're saving lives every single day and almost every day from a fire.
Yeah. Oh, that's gotta be very difficult to have to choose, because every single one of them, I'm sure, is worthy just as much. Thank you for sharing that, Chief. I hadn't known much about Medal Day, and now I have a better understanding. So, and then, like you said, with Corley said, how can we bottle that up? Maybe to the listeners out there, maybe it's not Medal Day, but maybe we can incorporate something large or small in appreciating or celebrating the winners in our organizations a little bit more than we have been. And if it's non-existent, maybe we can start doing something.
And that's a great segue. So think about that, right? So somebody gets promoted, celebrate. We should be vigorously celebrating promotions. And if you save somebody from a fire, that should go without saying that you're celebrating that. But a CPR save should be celebrated. We need to celebrate our successes because that puts the wind beneath people's sails. So, you know, and as you said earlier, just a simple thank you. Somebody could be having a bad day. Their career could be heading in the wrong direction. And just a couple of simple words that you say to them could course correct their entire career. You think about that. Someone 10 years and they're disenchanted, disenfranchised with their department, and you come along and you just say a couple of words, whatever it is, you could change that whole trajectory of that person's career. Yeah. The impact that you have, right? A simple pebble, right? The little pebble and the ripples, the effects that it makes could have generational and career-long impacts. I've seen it on multiple occasions, and I hear about it time and time again when I go to different conferences around the country. And I try and remind people, hey, it is a privilege to serve. We are the lucky ones. We are in the greatest profession on the planet.
Yep.
And, you know, but we got to make sure that we're celebrating our wins and celebrating our people.
Yep.
And we sometimes don't do that as much as or as rigorously as we should be.
All right. Well, the Leadership Challenge, Chief. Leadership Challenge is where we get to ask you to challenge another individual out there. Corley Moore kindly challenged you to be on the show today. Thank you for taking up his challenge to be here. So is there someone out there, Chief, that you would recommend that would share a message for our listeners to?
Yeah, there absolutely is. But before we went on the show, off the air, we spoke about your mentor, Bill Mack. And I just want to just briefly just say, hey, Bill, we're thinking about you. We were talking about you earlier. And thank you for being a great mentor. I heard so many great things about you. And just know that nobody fights alone, and you have a team. You have a team behind you, and that now includes me. So, so thank you for what you told me about Bill earlier. So, Bill, we are thinking of you and praying for you.
Thank you, Chief.
So the first. So I know it's I'm supposed to be one, right? But so first, what's the deal with Scott Thompson? Like, how many people have to say Scott Thompson needs to be on this show before Scott Thompson decides to clear his schedule and get on the show? Right? I mean, come on.
This is the
come on, Scott. What are you waiting for?
I will say he's the first individual to be challenged twice. I think it'll go without saying that he'll be the first individual to be challenged by three different people.
But I'm just trying to goad him, but I'm going to give you two other people.
Oh,
and I mentioned both of them. So Chris Stewart, out of retired from Phoenix. He's now working for a suburb of Phoenix. He's just a wealth of knowledge and experience. He would be a great guest. And I mentioned him earlier. I met Chris as part of the UL acquired attack panel and have become good friends with him. And he's a great person to bounce stuff off of. And I mentioned Dina Alley earlier, and she's the other person that I would say who's now working for the First Responder Center for Excellence as well, in addition to being a battalion chief. Those would be my two people. And of course, Scott's got to, you know, figure out what he's doing.
I'll reach out to Chief Thompson as well as, is it Chief Stewart and Chief Alley? Does that sound right?
Yes. Yep. Okay. And I'll give you their information. Yep.
Awesome. No, I highly appreciate that, Chief. And I will say it every episode, the success of today and this show, it goes to individuals like yourself that continue to help us grow leaders in the fire service. So those listening in will resonate, I'm sure, heavily with a lot of stuff that you said. So thank you for sharing and continuing to help us further the message and the concept and the conversation around leadership. But before we close here, Chief, how do we find Frank Lieb? Obviously, the First Responder Center for Excellence. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And then how else can we find Chief Lieb? Are you out there teaching seminars? You said you're going to kind of – how do we find you?
Yeah, so the Cornerstones of Leadership on Facebook is one place. On Twitter, I am FireFrank76 or X, whatever you want to call it. I'm on LinkedIn as well. And those are the best places, and via email as well. I could be reached via that as well. I never remember the email address.
I don't remember mine.
Yeah. firstresponderconsultant@gmail.com is the best way to reach me there. But the social media way works as well. There's a QR code to my Linktree, which also has a way to contact me. If you have a copy of my book, it's in that as well. Social media is best way, probably.
Got it. And before we close, lasting leadership thoughts you would like to leave our listeners with before we close on the kitchen table.
I think the greatest advice that I got was to read something fire related every day. It's the number one way to fight back complacency. And I'm not even going to try and define complacency, because Corley Moore defined it better than I've ever heard it defined on when you had him on the podcast. But you know, just be better. Own your seat. Don't be a slug. Be the salt. If you do that, you'll do well in this beloved profession. And find new people to be in our profession, because we need young firefighters to join.
There you go. As we close today on episode 47 of The Kitchen Table, I just want to say thank you, Chief Lee, for your time and helping us continue to spread this conversation around leadership. For you listeners out there, I suppose the final challenge of the day is this. As the chief was talking about at FDNY, as he talked about the mindset that those firefighters have, he talked about that winning mindset. I suppose the challenge is, what are you going to do today? What are you going to do on your next shift and every shift for that matter to make that crew and that firehouse the best house on the planet? Thank you, everybody, for tuning in today to The Kitchen Table. We truly hope that you found this time valuable, and we hope that we've inspired you to take action, to lead, and to spread the leadership conversation. Till next time, be safe, be intentional, stay curious.